In professional sports, a franchise player is an athlete who is not simply the best player on their team, but one that the team can build their franchise around for the foreseeable future.
Welcome into a brand new edition of Franchise Players. This is your host, Desmond Johnson, here with you on TGI Friday, WWBG 1470 AM, here in the Triad, every Friday, 3 to 6 p.m. And, of course, you can catch the encore of Franchise Players out in Forsyth County on WTOB 980 AM, 96.7 FM, 6 o'clock p.m. on Fridays. Get you ready for Friday kickoffs. Got state playoffs starting tonight. Of course, we're your home for high school football coverage here in the Triad. Got two huge ones concerning East Forsyth and Grimsley. Winston-Salem Journal Prep beat writer Mark Pruitt will be on with us to preview some of those games from around the Triad and who's got a shot to maybe bring home some hardware in about 4 or 5 weeks. And then also we've got Dimitri Robinos coming on from the Young Guns podcast and from Panthers Playbook. And he's going to talk a little Carolina Panthers with us as well. But before we get to all that good stuff, it's basketball season. This is the time of the year where folks like myself and content creators like my man Brendan Marks sitting here in the studio, where a bunch of things just kind of converge, like multiverses in the Marvel universe. They all just kind of overlap each other at the same time. So we've got football. You got baseball just ended. You've got college basketball about to start Monday. So my man's not, he's not really doing anything right now. So he decided he'd stop by and talk to us a little bit about some UNC hoops. What's going on, Brendan?
Absolutely. No, I appreciate you having me. It's one of those things. It feels like you wait all year for the season and then it still sneaks up on you, but I'm excited.
Yeah. It completely snuck up on me. I was at A&T last week doing their football press conference I do on Monday out in East Greensboro. And we were talking to the Brian Holloway, the assistant athletic director. And I was like, when is basketball's got to be around the corner? And I just happened to glance at the calendar. I was like, oh my gosh, it's November the 6th. It's like right here. Like, so they play Monday. And they actually have UNCG right after that too. But I got a chance. We're doing ACC Big Four Hoops preview like we do every fall here. So we'll have one for Wake Forest, one for Duke, and one for NC State. Although if you've been following me on Twitter, I've got a bunch of NC State fans mad at me right now because I said some things about their fan base and they're not very pleased with me right now. We'll make that up. let's talk a little UNC hoops. I saw them play in their exhibition game from Friday against St. Augustine. And I was joking with you off air before we started. The first thing I noticed watching about a half of this game, Hubert went out and got some shooters. Like there was a plan here. Like he actually went out and found some dudes. Like it's more than just one kid that can shoot. It's like all of them. Like all of them can shoot. What describe the method to this madness of Hubert Davis? Because honestly, this is the first team and is going into his third season now as UNC head coach where it feels like he got a chance to build his own team as opposed to coaching someone else's team and trying to apply his stuff on top of it. So give me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, for sure. No, I completely agree with you. And I think, you know, I've seen some folks after the way that last season ended have already sort of been calling for his job and saying he should be on the hot seat or whatever. And the point that you just illustrated there that he hasn't really had full roster building autonomy until this offseason, I think is so important. And I think when you look at what he did, like very clearly, he had a brutally honest self-scout earlier this offseason and said, okay, we were the second worst three-point shooting team in North Carolina history. We had the fewest assists of any North Carolina team in history since that became a recorded stat. I should probably add some shooters and some ball handlers.
Yeah.
and that's exactly what he did, though. You know, you go out, you get a guy like Cormac Ryan. Obviously, you know, he hit 40% for a Sweet 16 team 2 years ago, has been a proven shooter throughout his career. He's actually the oldest guy on the team. I don't know if folks realize that. He's older than Armando Bacot, 25 wow. years old.
Oh, geez.
I know, right? What are you doing? These guys are going to start drawing from Social Security. but so you get Cormac Ryan, you get a guy like Harrison Ingram, who's going to play as a point forward. We saw some of that in the exhibition. Is a really interesting sort of hybrid 3-4, can handle the ball, can slash, can kick out. You know, getting a guy in Paxson Wojcik, who, despite it being at a lower level in the Ivy League at Brown, also has proven the ability to hit shots from the perimeter. So I think Hubert went out and was very targeted in what he wanted. I think that you know, we'll see what the results actually yield once the games start that matter. But the early returns have certainly been promising in turning around what last season's problems were.
We'll get to RJ and Armando in just a bit, because, of course, they're the two, other than Seth Trimble and Jalen Washington was on the team last year. But the main cogs, the ones that have been getting playing time the past year, have been Armando and RJ. We'll get to them in just a second. Two of the guys that that stood out for me watching the exhibition, for starters, Harrison Ingram. I wasn't sure when they brought him in, when I saw him on the list of guys that they were bringing in through the portal, what exactly his role was going to be. And then watching him in the exhibition, he kind of can do a little bit of everything. He was shooting threes. He was down there getting in the paint, you know, getting rebounds. He was moving the ball well. He seems like he started. I don't know if that's going to be the case once the season starts, but he seems like that guy you need kind of like at power forward. They can kind of stretch it a little bit. He's only 6'7", but he can do a lot of different things out in the court. What's been your impression of Harrison from first sights, from what you've seen so far?
Yeah, I think that he was probably, you know, the most coveted transfer that North Carolina pulled out of the portal. He was a former McDonald's All-American, a guy that the staff actually recruited heavily at the time out of high school, really wanted him. And yeah, I think you're totally right in that assessment. Like, he can do a little bit of everything. I think they're going to probably use him between the three and the four. I think he'll play both roles, definitely will be a starter. But he's brought in, again, to remedy some of those issues that I was just talking about last season. You know, ball movement and having him as a point forward. Like, the last 2 years, the front court players who Hubert Davis has brought in, first Brady Manek and then Pete Nance, I would say they were much more traditional front court players where, yes, both of them could step outside and hit shots, but they were rebounding. They were competing defensively on the interior. You know, we're being asked to play, you know, like big men in drop coverage in different ball screen situations. Harrison is going to be asked to do a little bit of everything. So I think especially on the defensive end, you're talking about a guy in RJ Davis who's kind of small. You're talking about a guy in Armando Bacot who has not proven to be the most mobile big in his life. You're losing Leaky Back, who was your best defender the last several seasons. That is a void also that I think Harrison Ingram is really going to be asked to step up and fill and to take on some of those tougher perimeter assignments. So I would argue that after RJ and Armando, he will probably be the most important player on this team. Certainly Cormac Ryan and spacing the floor is going to be critical, but Harrison's ability, like you said, to do a little bit of everything is going to be crucial for this team, especially just given the position he plays.
The other player that jumped out to me watching the game, and again, it was St. Augustine, they're a D2 CIAA team, so the level of competition wasn't the same, but you still got to hit shots. If you have an open shot, you have to be able to hit it. And I've gotten used to seeing them not hit those shots over the past like 4 or 5 years, wide open shots. And I've gotten used to the ball kind of getting stuck. I don't want to put all this blame on Caleb Love like the rest of the fan base is doing and kind of absolving the rest of the team. It was just the team was built funny in terms of what Hubert was trying to bring in on top of what was already there. You had the COVID year, so you had people like Armando taking advantage of an extra year. Leaky had that extra year. So you kind of had this team that was there longer than they normally would have been, almost a year longer, and they were riding off the wave of that Final Four run, so it made sense at the time. But by the time we got to the end of last year, it was the same problems. He was only running 6 or 7 guys, and you know, just, you could tell that Hubert did not trust the guys on the bench that he had. I did not catch that vibe at all. And now granted, it was an exhibition, but he was using his bench throughout from the very beginning. And the other kid that I was referring to is Elliot Cadeau, the freshman that reclassified, was supposed to come in next year with the highly ranked class that Hubert has. I think it's ranked. I think it's still number 1. I'm not sure what Duke getting Cooper Flagg. I don't know if that's changed or not, but I was really impressed with Cadeau. They were trying to compare him on the broadcast to former UNC point guards. And they mentioned a little Kendall Marshall and they mentioned Ed Cota. And I was like, wow, that's a really good company to be in for those two. But his game didn't feel like those two when I was watching it, because they're more pass first type of guards. He felt like Kobe White to me, like in terms of he can get his shot off like wherever. He's very aggressive on offense and he seems very confident in his shot all the way out past the 3-point line. Give me your thoughts on that. And what would you tell Carolina fans that have not seen this kid yet, why they should be excited that he's here a year early?
Yeah, so, you know, Cadeau reclassifying, coming in a year early, he's only doing that because he's going to make an impact. And I don't know that he's going to start. I don't know that he's going to play 30 minutes a game right from the jump. I do expect by the end of the year he's going to be one of Hubert Davis's closers, which I would argue is more important than starting games, is finishing them. But yeah, you know, to me, I got the chance to see him play a couple of times on the, you know, AAU circuit the past couple of seasons. And you know, to me, the guy who stands out is Kendall Marshall. I know in the exhibition things are a little different, but he is the best passing point guard North Carolina has had since Kendall. His vision is insane. I mean, his ability to grab a rebound and hit a full court outlet alley-oop pass is special. I mean, there's not a lot of guys who can do that. And I think the interesting thing for him is going to be, okay, how do I balance being aggressive with my shot, which we saw first at Live Action with Hubert Davis. We saw it as well in the exhibition. How does he balance that with trying to be that facilitator that UNC quite frankly needs him to be? You know, he and RJ Davis are both on the smaller side. You know, if we're being generous, they're both under 6 foot one. if we're being generous, probably more like,
depends on what shoes they're wearing that day, pretty much.
Probably more like 6 feet, exactly. But I think at this point, Elliot is probably better on the ball than he is off the ball. RJ, I think, is comfortable doing either. And so how does Hubert Davis either stagger those two so that you don't have two smaller guards that you're getting picked on defensively? How does he play them together and make sure that it's not a situation where those guys are getting hunted? Like, those are the things I'm looking to see. But Cadeau is one of the better athletes on the team. He's got crazy vertical. I don't know if, you know, people fully realize that, but
yeah, for size. Yeah.
Between the passing, the aggressiveness, the athleticism, the intelligence, those are all of the things that you want in a traditional Carolina point guard. And the biggest reason I'm excited to watch him play this year, not just him, but also RJ Davis, is because those are fast, quick thinking, willing passers, you can play traditional Carolina basketball. You can go back to the secondary break. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that this season. And obviously North Carolina's had plenty of success with that. So I'm excited to see how these guys look filling those roles.
It felt strange seeing it. Like, I've been a Carolina fan my entire life. And I guess I just kind of forgot how we played because like it felt like I was putting on a pair of slippers that I had put on a long time watching the game. So I'm like, oh, the running, everyone's shooting. Like, we don't have to depend on Armando like completely to win this game. Like, he was almost an afterthought, really, like during the game. And I mean, he still, you know, I think he had like 13 points and close to 10 boards. And that kind of, he had an Armando game. But what are your expectations for Armando and RJ? Because for Carolina fans that didn't keep up with this in the offseason, this is literally a brand new team. Like, the only people that are on this team that you're familiar with from previous seasons are RJ, Armando, Jalen Washington, and Seth Tribble. The right, like Creighton Lebo and others, they were, you know, they're bench players, but everyone else on this team is brand new and came in through the portal or the freshman. So it's literally like a brand new page for Carolina basketball that feels like it's 2 years behind from when we hired Hubert. And then we just got treated to a bunch of different things in Hubert's rookie season that causes us to be, you know, happy about it. But I never caught the Bob Hubert was on a hot seat of any sort. He was the college basketball coach of the year 2 years ago. Like, literally, like, he took six kids to the Final Four and was up 16 points in the national championship game, and then he's on the hot seat a year later, like, because the pieces don't fit. Like, it never floated well with me. But give me your ceilings for Armando and for RJ in terms of individual accolades, because Armando, at this point, the only thing left from the dude is get his jersey in the rafters, right?
That's what I was going to say. You know, it's crazy to think that the guy who has UNC's all-time rebounding record, UNC's all-time double-double record, the only player in the history of the NCAA tournament to have six double-doubles in one postseason, has not yet satisfied the conditions needed to have his jersey retired. It's pretty wild to me. Yeah. And it is something that I'll tell you from speaking to Armando, he is acutely aware of. He very much understands what he needs to do to get there. And that is to be the ACC Player of the Year. You know, he finished second for that award 2 years ago to Alondis Williams. I think, you know, you could argue that he probably should have had that award at that point. And the other thing I would say about Armando is, look, you know, for as great as he has been, he's experienced a lot of losing. He's experienced some of the lows in the modern era of North Carolina basketball. So I think the ceiling for him is what we saw 2 years ago. It's an All-American type campaign. It's a campaign that gets him in the rafters. I mean, I think it'll help him a lot that he has slimmed down some this offseason. Mm-hmm. He admitted earlier this offseason that he got a little heavy last year, maybe contributed to some of the nagging ankle injuries, never was really giving his body an opportunity to heal. I think that being lighter will also probably give him more opportunities and drop coverage. He can actually hopefully be more of a rim protector than he's been the last 2 years, but I think he's got All-American potential, absolutely. And then as far as RJ is concerned, I do not understand how RJ Davis is not on either of the first or second team All-ACC. I do not understand. I
have no idea why. Yeah, me too.
Not that those votes really matter for anything. They don't count, but to say that this guy's not one of the 10 best players in the conference is absurd to me. So, you know, again, I think the last 3 years, what we've seen is that RJ Davis and Caleb Love have coexisted in the backcourt. We have seen really, really good things. And we saw things, especially last year, that were not as good. I would encourage people to look back at the run to the Final Four in 2022, when UNC shifted RJ into more of an on-ball, ball-handling, point guard-centric role. And instead, Caleb, we're going to play you more as a pure two, focus on your scoring. We don't want you to have to make those decisions. And what happened was RJ's assist totals doubled. His scoring also increased. And UNC's offense on the whole was some of the best offense that we had seen, you know, obviously during Hubert Davis's tenure so far. So I think that RJ has All-American potential. And I know that seems like really lofty for him. If this guy was Caleb Love's size, we'd have been talking about him as a first-round NBA pick.
Exactly.
I
mean,
last year he hit 36% of his threes and he did it with a busted hand and, you know, playing in an offense where I would venture that at least a quarter of his shots came with less than 4 seconds on the shot clock. So I think RJ and Armando both have All-American potential. And quite frankly, they need to be almost at that level for North Carolina to hit its ceiling. But these guys are capable of it. They certainly can be that good.
Go subscribe to The Athletic. Get all the goodies you need. Brendan is the writer for UNC Athletics and Duke Athletics. You can follow him on Twitter. I refuse to call it X, Brendan. I'm never going to call it X. I'm a rebel. I'm never. It's going to be
I love it. I'm right there with you.
It's going to be Twitter till it dies. And that might be like
soon. Might be soon.
But you can follow him there at Brendan R. Marks. Appreciate you coming on, man.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you.
Coming up, Dimitri Ravenos chops it up with me, a little Carolina Panthers talk, what to do with Miles Sanders and thoughts on Bryce Young. You are listening to Franchise Players here on WWBG 1470 AM and TobaccoRoadSportsRadio.com.
In professional sports, a franchise player is an athlete who is not simply the best player on their team, but one that the team can build their franchise around for the foreseeable future.
Welcome back into Franchise Players here on Tobacco Road Sports Radio, TobaccoRoadSportsRadio.com, part of your WWBG TGI Friday Sports Talk lineup. We've got some high school football first round of the state playoffs tonight, and you can catch these games on Tobacco Road Sports Radio on WTOB and WCOG. Mark Pruitt will be on here in just a bit to give us some updates on those games, including the East Forsyth game and the Grimsley game. Those two games we will have here for you live starting at 7 o'clock. With me right now, he is the host of the Young Gun podcast with Miss Lauren Brownlow. He also is the host of College Football Bubble Bath that you can catch on TikTok and on Instagram. A great segment that I came across one day randomly scrolling through my IG, and all of a sudden I see my man pouring out some champagne or something and filling a bubble bath up, and he's just sitting in the bubble bath talking to you about something very important in college football that week. It's Mr. Dimitri Ravenos. What's going on, man? How you doing?
How are you, Des? Good to talk to you, man. Thanks for having me on again.
So I wanted to wait until I was like, you know, when the Panthers finally win a game, I'm going to invite Dimitri or Lauren or both. I tried to get Lauren on, but there was a conflict. We might have her on in the next couple of weeks. I wanted to wait until they won before I brought you on. I didn't know it was going to take like 2 months.
Literally a month and a half.
I was like, come on, Panthers win a game. So they're finally 1-6. They defeat the Houston Texans 15-13 in a game that had more drama than it probably should have had, especially at the very end. Shout out to Eddie Pinero for basically trying to get iced three separate times on offside penalties and still hitting that 22 yarder or whatever it was to win the game.
Yeah, I mean, really shout out to Houston for making a 37 yard field goal, a 23 yard field goal by the time it was all said and done.
After the second one, I'm like, what are they doing? Like, why they're going closer to the goal line, not away. Like, this isn't gonna help. Like, are you just like waving the flag? Like, let's just see if we can kind of freeze them, which would have been the most total Panther thing to do if they had done that three times and on the fourth try
and then missed the field goal. Yes.
Yeah, he's like 15.
Trust me, as it got closer and closer, I was getting really worried that not only was he going to miss the kick, but he was going to miss the field goal, and that would have made his missed extra point literally the difference in the game.
That would have been so Pantherish to do. And I was like, are we going that route? Is that what we're doing here? Is that how we're going to get to 0-7? But now we escape all that. Everything's happy in Pantherland this week. They're taking on the Indianapolis Colts this Sunday, 4 o'clock kickoff on CBS. So it's a late kickoff. It's at Bank of America Stadium. No Anthony Richardson. He's on IR for the rest of the season. So we don't get to see Bryce Young versus Anthony Richardson like we thought we were going to in the preseason. This feels like another winnable game. Like, can the Panthers catch this division? Like, am I too early to ask this question to you? Can they, because the division is trash, right? The division is horrible.
Well, you're not too early to ask, can they catch the division? But the answer is soundly no. let's be honest. And listen, I will absolutely admit, before the season began, I thought, you know what? The division is trash. I really, obviously, right? I wouldn't be hosting the podcast if I didn't really, really believe in Bryce Young's ability as an NFL quarterback. I thought they could win the division. Then I watched them play football, and no, they cannot win the division. Like, I think that there is so much wrong with this team that Bryce getting comfortable is not going to solve, right? Yeah. The offensive line, Bryce can't do anything about the offensive line. Bryce can't do anything about Miles Sanders. Bryce can't do anything, by the way, about when Chuba Hubbard comes in and we're all like, oh, finally. Oh, and what a great day he had. Bryce can't do anything about that great day being 15 carries for 28 friggin' yards. Like, yeah, how abused are we as a fan base that that's what we're excited about?
That's so true. Although, I do have this theory about Miles Sanders, and I thought about it last night. I've already gone through most of the Panther stuff that I'll do for the week content-wise. So you're the first one I'm going to throw this theory on. Miles Sanders, everyone's like, you know, me included, I'm like, Chuba's got to start. Like, Miles just ain't getting it. I don't know what it is. There's no burst. Like, I don't know why we're paying this guy. Then I thought about it last night. I was watching one of our pods on the Keep Pounding podcast network, and I was listening to the two hosts there. And I was like, you know what? I think everybody kind of forgot. Miles Sanders was hurt in training camp. He had like a groin or something, remember?
Yeah.
And then he hurt his shoulder, and he's dealing with something else. He has not been 100% healthy from the moment he got here. So we haven't really seen 100% healthy Miles Sanders in this offense. And I think that needs to be prefaced whenever we talk about him, because the one thing I'm noticing is there's no burst when he hits the hole. Like, he just kind of gets in there.
And if you got a groin injury,
that could explain a lot of that, right?
Along those lines, he doesn't really, or he has not really shown the ability to pivot when the hole suddenly becomes not the hole anymore. And look, there are two things that I would say in response. Number one, you're right. But number two, he wasn't really that guy in Philadelphia, right? Like, he was Jalen Hurts' checkdown option. And that was sort of how the Eagles offense was built last year. And so he thrived. And the other thing that you got to remember is it's not like he was setting the world on fire before last season. Like, I think this was a case of the Panthers wanting to make a splash, overspending, not just on a talent, but on a position that's not the model anymore. You draft a guy in the third or fourth round, run him into the ground, and then go draft another guy in the third or fourth round. You don't have to give a running back $25 million.
Don't let Jonathan Stewart anywhere near you, because he will get mad.
Listen, I'm not saying that it's right by any stretch of the imagination. I'm just saying, like, financially, that is the model now.
It's facts, yeah.
And so I think that, and look, another part of this too, and Lauren and I have talked about this, as much as Miles Sanders has been a disappointment, I also think we are putting on Miles Sanders some of the other disappointment. Hayden Hurst, for example, is another guy they spent a lot of money on, who has been thrown to less than 20 times through seven games. You know how you know why that is really showing up? The fact that he's barely on the field in these last three games.
And there's a couple of players like that. Jeremy Chinn, before he got hurt, it was like, why is he not playing? Especially as other defenders kept getting injured in front of him. You were like, well, they got to use Jeremy now. There's nobody left on the roster. And he still wasn't getting any play.
I talked to Ryan Leafa on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and he pointed out that, like, if the Panthers really wanted to get creative, they would find Laviska Shenault more than four touches per game. Now, that's another guy that's injured right now, but he has a history going back to his time, not just in Jacksonville, but in Colorado. He has a history of being used as a Deebo Samuel type of weapon. And that is probably that probably gives him more experience and a little more upside to be used the way that we saw Miles Sanders being used in Philadelphia last year.
Which means Miles Sanders was pretty much not needed. His services really weren't needed. Like,
I truly believe when Shenault comes back from his groin injury, I truly believe it's going to be very hard to find Miles Sanders carries in this offense.
And I like Raheem Blackshear. He had that long, actually had a couple of good returns in the special game on Sunday. He didn't get a lot run. Well, the whole run game was just like blah on Sunday.
It was bad, right? Like, I think Chuba had 15 carries, and then after that, it was stacked up. Like, Bryce had four, Blackshear had three, and Sanders had two.
And, you know, thinking back on the game, it didn't really feel like that they needed to run so much, because Bryce was kind of, it was the first game Bryce looked comfortable to me, like throughout, even though he got sacked six times.
Yep.
I wasn't even going to bring up Ikequanu, but I think we probably should here, because dude, what has happened? Like, I saw my guy Monty Fetty on Twitter that we do podcasts with. He posted a clip of it was a pass that that Bryce completed, probably about 6-7 yards, like right middle of the field. There was like two wide receivers coming across and one was kind of behind him. And he was pointing out three things in the play. He was like, first, what in the world is Ikequanu doing? Like, literally, you see Icky, the guy's coming at him, and he just does a simple move and just Mickey whiffs like completely. And the dude goes running by him and hits Bryce. And like, you can tell Bryce knows he's about to get hit.
Yeah.
Gets the ball out, completes, accurate, all that good stuff. There was another play. Icky got rolled on his back, like literally like bum rushed. And he's like this, like a turtle on the ground.
What? There was also the play that it stands out because Chuba Hubbard stepped in and made the block. And
yes. It got
blown up, but it slowed the defender down getting to Bryce. Right. But on that very same play, go back and watch the replay. The defender gets around Icky, and in the middle of the play, Icky throws his hands up.
Yeah. Like, what are you doing?
And I know that is one of those things where it's not like Icky doesn't know what to do. That is one of those things where, like, I mean, think about when you are in like high school, right? And you are on the, and maybe I'm, you know, giving you some insight into my life not everyone can relate to, but you're right on the cusp of failing a class and you get a D on a test, like a 1-point D. It's 1 point away from failing. And you throw your hands up and you're like, well, what the hell do I do now? I'm in the exact same position I was before this damn test. Like, I feel for Icky, but at the same time, like, Lauren and I talk about this a lot because Lauren loves Ikequanu. My love of the Panthers is solely based on loving Bryce Young. So at this point, I do not love Ikequanu. I want him to be held accountable every single week.
That's the problem, because I feel okay, he's a remnant of the Matt Rule era, right? Mm-hmm. And if you really look at it, and really you can kind of start pulling Scott Fitter in this a little bit too, because his draft picks, JC Horn, can't stay on the field.
Yep.
Ikequanu. I don't even know I mean, the dude's turned into a turnstile, like literally at this point, like every week, it's just someone's running right by him. You can't have a left tackle that you picked in the top 10 of the first round of the NFL draft regress this much.
And well, I'm especially because
last year, like it wasn't so much that he was really good last year, but they started running the ball 40 times a game downhill, and he's more of a run blocker than pass blocker, right?
Yeah. And I mean, the fact that he did, by year's end, he did look like he belonged in the NFL as a left tackle. The fact that you felt that way is the reason you were confident enough to trade up from 9 to 1, whether it was going to be Bryce or Stroud or whoever. Mm-hmm. It was the reason you felt like, okay, this is the time to act and go get our franchise quarterback. And if that is not in place, the guy you took, and I say this is someone that loves Bryce Young, the guy you took is not the guy you take if you don't have that left tackle.
Nope. Yeah, exactly. Because you're going to get him killed.
Yeah.
It's the NFL. It's like, yeah, I mean, so scared, listen, for him.
I do want to push back on that just a little bit, because how many hard, like, just blow up Bryce kind of hits has he taken this year?
Oh,
he's bounced right back up. Right? Like, he's not as fragile as I think that all of the naysayers were, trying to stoke the fears that he may be. But that being said, over time, that's good. That's going to take a toll.
And I don't even say that because of his size. I got over size. Like, I haven't even thought about his size really all season. It's never really come into play. Matter of fact, CJ Stroud had like 3 balls batted down on Sunday, and I don't remember Bryce getting any balls batted down at all.
This is the sports radio equivalent of I don't see color.
Like, it never even crossed my mind. But then it's really more, it could be CJ back there. It could be Sam Darnold back there. It was the same situation, and I'm seeing dudes run unabated to the quarterback from the blind side, like I'm sitting with Icky. I'd worry for their safety, and like I'm really starting to worry. I asked Skylar Callahan, is there another guy on the roster right now that can play left tackle besides Icky? And he was like, that's healthy? No. And I'm like,
exactly. Exactly. I mean, and look, going back to what you said about Miles Sanders, this has been the issue since training camp, right? Like, at some point, are we going to get to this place where you've got to call Deontay Brown off the practice squad? I know you move him there because you have an abundance of particularly inside linemen, but my guy, and again, like another Bama guy, right? Like at Bama, Deontay Brown was excellent. That has not translated to the NFL at all. So if you are bringing him up, you've got some serious problems.
The stench of Matt Rule, while it's gotten weaker, it still wafts over the entire franchise in terms of selections and what they did.
This is very similar to, Steve Spurrier in Washington. This is very similar to Nick Saban in Miami. Look at what Rule has done in his first year at Nebraska. That is clearly a case of a dude that understands what it takes to get the most out of kids.
Yeah.
It does not work the same with grown men, particularly grown men who make more money than you do.
When you guys play harder, that means we have to coach or whatever his thing is. Got Dmitri Ravenos on with us here. Talking a little Panther talk. Follow him on Twitter at Dmitri Ravenos. Before I get you out of here, thoughts on Thomas Brown, because there was a huge discussion about how the offense looked better and all this other stuff. I didn't see that at all. Matter of fact, I thought the plays were exactly the same. They're calling from the same playbook. The only difference to me was that there was more window dressing. They had more pre-snap movement, because they were doing a little bit of that, but it was more so Bryce could see if it was man or zone.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit more than that on Sunday, and I imagine that would get bigger as they go forward. And it felt like they had better control of time. I've been so irritated with their time management in terms of no urgency when it comes to the end of the play clock. And I think a lot of that was due to Frank Wright calling the plays. With him not having to call the plays, it felt like he was able to kind of keep his eyes on the rest of the daycare center for the most part and let Thomas call the plays. Everything felt like it was running smoother on offense, even though they only scored 15 points. They had opportunities to score more than that. Give me your thoughts on this, Thomas Brown taking over the playbook, and what did you see from him that you like?
Yeah, I think the one thing that I liked that the most, and this is not on Thomas Brown. This is my assumption of what a guy that had never called plays in the NFL before might do. He ran the ball a lot less than I was expected. I thought for sure he was going to go run heavy, not only because he has a history of being a running back and a running back's coach, but because like that's an easy way to avoid Bryce taking so many hits, right? But he really
from a lack of trying, though. I mean, again, you said Chuba had what, like 15 carries or whatever?
15 carries, but at one point, the difference was almost like 65-35 in terms of runs, in favor of passes, in terms of plays called. So I think there is a comfort with the playbook. Look, the guy came off of the McVay tree. There is obviously respect for him as a play calling mind in the NFL. And as much as we started out with Frank Reich calling plays, I can't imagine that was the long-term plan for either Frank or Scott Fitterer when that hire was made, that he was always going to be the play caller. I think that what I came into the week with, it really what I came into the season with Thomas Brown, with all the talk about, oh, he's going to very quickly become a head coaching candidate. I was very cynical and thought like, well, yeah, of course he's going to become a coaching candidate. He's a new name we can trot out there for all the Rooney Rule openings so that someone can go hire Urban Meyer again. but, you know, I think that we saw that his team really responds to him. I don't know if he does become a hot head coaching candidate at some point. It's not going to be about X's and O's. It's going to be about like that team never looked out over its skis the way they have in the first 6 weeks of the season when Thomas Brown was running a huddle on the sideline.
That's a good point. Good point. So I'm looking forward to see what he does with this offense going forward. And we're getting healthier. We're starting to get some guys back. I'm holding out to the hope. Me and Jonathan Stewart, we're the optimists when it comes to the Panthers and what they can do. He was already like 11 straight, baby. Let's go. And I'm like, all right, let's see.
I mean, listen, from his lips to God's ears. Yeah. I just, you know,
schedule opens up. Let's just take them one game at a time. Carolina Colts, 4 o'clock kickoff, CBS this Sunday. Do me a favor. Guys, if you're watching this or listening to this, go over to YouTube, subscribe to their channel, OG Triangle Media, where you can catch the Young Guns podcast with my man Dmitri and Lauren Brownlow, who I said we'll have on in a couple of weeks to talk some Panther talk. Love the show. Love everything you guys are doing over there. And honestly, I see what you guys are doing. I see what, you know, Ovi's and Joe are doing with their show and everything. I kind of feel like sports media is shifting. You've wrote some articles about this for Barrett, where it feels like it's kind of shifting towards content creators owning their stuff as opposed to everybody fighting to go to the same three outlets to get everything out. And it's all kind of lost in the sauce, but everyone's kind of figuring out their own lanes and figuring out how to do these kind of things. And I salute you guys. You guys are on the same track that I'm on, just out in the triangle and out here in the triad. And it's tough sledding, but it's fun. It's fun. And it's cool to be able to kind of get stuff out to people like this. So I appreciate everything you guys are doing.
Yeah, well, listen, I appreciate the kind words. We'll have a much longer talk about that at some point down the road for sure. But look, that's man, like I would be lying if I didn't say that when the network was being put together, we didn't go, well, Desmond has that thing in the triad and that seems to work. Let's do that.
So we'll definitely touch base soon. Let's get up, let's get some lunch or something. Let's do that. So I got Mark Pruitt right behind you. We got East Forsyth Page, and we've got
throw out the records.
Yeah, just first round. It's in Cape Vegas. Grimsley is going to start this trek back to the state championship. They're undefeated. They haven't lost a regular season game in 5 years or something nuts like that. We'll get into it. State playoffs starting right now. Mark Pruitt be on with us here in just a bit here on Franchise Players.
Franchise players are often referred to as the face of the franchise.
Welcome back to Franchise Players here on WTOB 980 AM, 96.7 FM, and WWBG 1470 AM, part of your TGI Friday lineup every Friday afternoon. I'm your host, Desmond Johnson. Shout out to our previous guest, Brendan R. Marks, coming in, giving us a UNC Hoops preview. And, of course, Dimitri Ravenos from the Young Guns podcast with Lauren Brownlow came in and talked a little Carolina Panthers talk. It is the opening week of the North Carolina High School Athletic Association State Football Playoffs. We have made it through 11 weeks of play here in the triad, and of course, you know, Tobacco Road Sports Radio is your leader in high school football coverage. Not one but two live games tonight. We'll get to those here in just a bit, but first we bring in prep beat writer for the Winston-Salem Journal, Mark Pruitt, to preview his top three games in the triad tonight. There's a lot going on. Mark, what's up, man?
How we doing? Playoff time.
Excited. All the brackets. I got all the brackets right here, so it's playoff time. Where are you going to be at tonight?
I will be in Moxville for the rematch with Mount Tabor. This time, Mount Tabor on the road at Davie County.
So that's a rematch game. Two Central Piedmont Conference foes, both teams getting in. The Central Piedmont Conference got five teams into the four-way playoffs. Those two, along with East Forsyth, West Forsyth, who had their battle last Friday night out at the Village. East Forsyth victorious 45-35 to take the conference championship for the second year in a row. We'll get to them in just a bit. And who's the team I'm missing? I said Reagan, Tabor, East, West, Davie. Davie. So
at least one Central Piedmont conference team will get into the second round.
Right. Yeah. Is that one of your big three?
That's my first one, I think. So,
all right, let's get into it. What are you looking for in this game? Because it's at Davie, right? So they'll have that home field advantage.
Tabor won the regular season matchup 35-34, and it really put Tabor on track again. Tabor lost their first three in conference play this season. Had a lot of injuries, key injuries, especially on defense. Two of their best defensive players went out in the West Forsyth game early in that game. One of them, Kevin Frazier, came back against Davie and really made a big difference, just stopping the run, especially on the front line. He also got a couple of carries as a fullback, including one where he dragged, I think, seven or eight Davie defenders with him to convert a first down on a fourth down play that kind of led to a scoring drive. But that was a great game. Snook Peterkin, Tabor's dynamic wide receiver, safety, kind of do everything guy, two really highlight reel touchdown catches in that one, and blocked the potential game tying extra point that kept Tabor in the lead 35-34. Also a game where Tabor really, I was out talking to Coach Brown Wednesday afternoon and how they have rededicated themselves to the run. And Zion Thompson has kind of been that horse for them the last four games. He's had at least 95 yards in each of the last four games. And Coach Brown said they're making a much more concerted effort to get him the ball or touches 18 to 19 times so they can control the clock, get their defense, let their defense kind of do a lot of the trick there. Defense has allowed a total of 29 points the last three games, 19.5 games all season average. But you're heading into Moxville. You're heading to that dynamic Davie offense that's putting up almost 40 points every game. Kind of hit some speed bumps here the last few weeks of the season with a couple of losses, but I don't think you can ever count them out with Ty Miller, the quarterback. Markell Summers, the running back, who's gone for 200 plus the last couple of games. And then they got the three dynamic wide receivers. If Davey can stop Mount Tabor, if Davey's defense is, you know, is there, this is going to be a fun one to watch again. It was a great game the first time around, too. So.
Yeah, it's kind of a tale of two strengths, Davey's offense versus Tabor's defense, and haven't seen both up close and personal this season. That Davey offense, when it's humming, it's really hard to stop. Ty Miller's really got complete control over that offense, and Markell Summers is probably – him and Chaplin out at West Forsyth, probably the two best running backs in the conference, I think by far. He's has a stable of them, but when you want to look at a team that has like one dude that's going to get, you know, 30 plus carries, it's those two guys. So the winner of that game is going to end up taking on either the 3-seed Mooresville or the 30-seed AL Brown. So we'll keep an eye on that one. Who's your second game?
Keep it a little local. Northwest Guilford hitting the road to go to Chambers. Okay. 17-seed in Northwest Guilford. Mm-hmm. Finished second in the Metro. Chambers, 7-3 on the season. They're the 16 seed. Chambers won a couple of state championships in a row back around 2019.
18 and 19, yeah.
Yeah, somewhere around there. Still a really solid program. Northwest, two losses. One was the season opener against Burlington Williams, and then Grimsley beat them pretty handily. Yeah. But that's it. And I think we can talk about Tanner Ballou, the quarterback there, all we want to, and the weapons that they have around him. But it's the defense that really, I think, has kind of been overshadowed all season. I was looking at this a little earlier, and they've only given up an average of 14.5 points per game, which that was kind of unusual to me for Northwest Guilford. But Ballou's thrown for almost 2,000 yards and 22 touchdowns. He broke all of Rusty LaRue's passing records there this season. Running back Malik Jones, 11 touchdowns. He's a force. And then Trenton Cloud, their wide receiver. That's kind of Ballou's favorite target out there. But Chambers, we talk about Northwest defense. Chambers is the defense to watch. Allowed 118 points all season long. Always has been a calling card for that bunch. And quarterback Trey Robinson is a dynamic two-way threat. Almost 500 rushing yards, 8 touchdowns. 1,700 passing yards and 24 touchdowns against 3 interceptions. Kind of sounds a lot like Bryce Baker from East Forsyth. Limited interceptions, just quality ball control, and I think that's going to be a pretty good matchup for both of those guys as well.
Yeah, Chambers is known as one of the – Chambers and Huff are probably the two schools known as having the usually some of the top defenses in 4A over the past 5 or 6 years. And you're right, they won – back-to-back 2018 and 2019. I always joke with the Chambers fans on well, they were Vance in 2018 and the name change happened. I always joke with their fans on Facebook. We're all in a high school football kind of trash talk type group where there's like coaches and former players and stuff in there, and they're all rooting on their teams. Whenever I talk about East Forsyth and they talk about Chambers, like, well, we went back-to-back 4AA, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, the team that you saw walking out when y'all were walking in, that was East. We had just won the 4A right before you. Like, each time. So it's one of those things, and they've never run across each other. Like their paths have never crossed in the playoffs, as far as I can tell, since I've been back with East on the sports network. And they're on two opposite sides of the bracket, so if they do see each other, it's going to be in the Western Regional Final or something. But
Chambers was a 4AA too, so that wasn't
right. They never, they weren't even in the same brackets back then too. So the winner of that game, Chambers Northwest Guilford, gets either the 1-seed Weddington, who actually lost Friday. I'm surprised they actually held on to the 1-seed. Their strength of schedule kind of kept them narrowly over top of Watauga, and the 32-seed Providence. So Weddington hosting Providence on Friday night, I'd imagine Weddington's going to move on. So the winners, Chambers and Northwest Guilford, we might get a Weddington Chambers second round matchup, which is pretty.
Wouldn't that be fun? Crazy. Tough the Weddington's in. I mean, the Mylar Creek's no, you can't sneeze at them, and they're pretty good. And it's just it's a tough league down there where Huff and Weddington and all those guys.
So. Yeah. Yeah, they go out. So luckily, most of them are all kind of crammed up in the top part of this bracket. So a lot of them are going to probably eat each other. Who's your third game to look out for?
This one really intrigues me, too. I think we talked about this a little bit Wednesday night at Mossy's. Reagan going up the mountain to take on T.C. Roberson. Reagan's the number 25 seed, but I think that's a deceptive thing. They've just been riddled with injuries all season, including running back Jalen Moore, who – I don't believe he's playing tonight. I know Coach McGee was hopeful they can get him back for the first week of the playoffs, but my understanding is he will not be playing tonight. Reagan just lost their first four games of the season, but played a lot of people close. They got the win against West Forsyth in Clemens to give West its first conference loss in the CPC.
Flipped the conference. I think it was the same night that the Davy lost to Tabor. Davy, so
Davy lost to Tabor, and both Davy and West were undefeated at that point. So that kind of brought East back into the picture that night. But it's playoff time, win or go home, and Josh McGee is one of the brightest minds and one of the best coaches around. I think the 4-6 record is deceiving. They won four of their last six games to get in. I don't think it was a surprise to anybody that they did get in because they do have the talent. Jacob Smith is a great quarterback for those guys. But even without Jalen Moore, they've got enough weapons on the outside. Cassie Harvin is a good player. He had some injury issues earlier in the season, but he's back. Landon Callahan kind of makes the defense go down from his secondary position. I like what Reagan can do. I just like the strength of schedule in the CPC with the five teams in. And you're just never really sure about what's out there in the West as far as consistent week after week competition. Roberson's 8-2. They run an option offense. They got three guys that have over 700 rushing yards, including the quarterback, Lex Dinwiddie. But I just something about this intrigues me just because I just know the quality of what Reagan has seen all season long. They took Mooresville to the brink, which I think Mooresville is a higher seed, like a 2 or 3 seed.
They're a 3. Yeah, they're a 3 in the West. So
they were a drop two-point conversion pass at the end of the game from beating Mooresville earlier in the season. So
they play Grimsley in their non-conference. Grimsley's the 4 seed in the West. Of course, they played East Forsyth and West Forsyth in the conference schedule. East was the 7 seed. And actually, if Reagan had about 5 more minutes in that game, probably might have caught up to East. That was a game where
they led the whole way, too, didn't they?
Yeah. East came right there at the very end and kind of picked them up. And then, of course, West Forsyth, who they beat. West is the 11 seed. So there's somebody else they played non-conference, too. And we were just looking at their Marvin Ridge is they're the 15th seed. So they pretty much everybody they played made the playoffs, which is why they pretty much got in with a 4-6 record. Their strength of schedule is probably one of the top ones in the state. So they get in as well. Any others besides those three? Oh, by the way, the winner of that Reagan TC Roberson game will take on the winner of the 9 seed Myers Park or number 24 Charlotte Catholic, which is an interesting person.
Myers Park's been playing some really good football, and Catholic is Catholic. They always kind of make some noise.
Some of these high seeds, man, like Reagan, Charlotte Catholic, Chambers, Northwest Guilford. Like, it's kind of wild. Like, you kind of don't want to run into those teams in the first couple of rounds because it feels like those are games you should have been playing third round or higher. But you're going to see one of those teams probably by the second round. It's just loaded.
Second round matchups are always are, but it's, I know some of the coaches shake their heads when they see the brackets come out and go. I know Coach Brown was telling me Wednesday too. I'd rather not play a conference opponent in the first round, but is what it is. And
everyone in the CPC that I've talked to has said the exact same thing. And East played Tabor and West opening round, first and second round last year before they had Huff round 3. And I think it kind of, I don't know if it messed them up at all, but I guess it's a mentality thing. If you're seeing the same team over and over and over again, you're not having to prepare for something fresh and something new. So that Davy Tabor game is going to be interesting. Anything else out there?
I think another local, definitely local interest, East and Page at East, obviously. I don't know what Page has left in the tank. They got in. That's good. It's been kind of a down year for them. They had a lot of injuries, I think, too. But East just seems to be clicking right now and, keeping up with the game like I did last Friday night, how it went back and forth. And then West kind of got the 10-11 point lead, whatever it was. And then it was Bryce Baker time late.
Yeah, he just took over the fourth quarter.
And I just think they are playing their best football at the right time of the season. And I know that's one of Coach Willard's big things, but I see East winning Friday tonight, and just not sure what Paige has left to kind of back that up, but I know there'll be a lot of localized on that one for obvious reasons. They used to be conference opponents.
I was class 96 from East Forsyth, and Paige, we were Metro. Like when I was in high school, the Metro 4A, it stretched across like five counties. It felt like, cause it was us, Paige. Yeah. I think, Dudley was in our Metro, Burlington Williams, South Stokes, Carver. Like it was like this long swath across the entire triad. Cause all these schools hadn't been built yet. It was the 1990s or whatnot. And, Easton Page was usually that last week of the season. And it would determine the regular season, or the conference champion a lot of times in football. And we saw them in 92 when East won the whole thing. And back then, too, I always forget, it wasn't done like this with the seedings and the RPI or whatever. They just took the top two teams in each conference. And it was already kind of – you're already kind of placed in where you were going to go. So in 92, the Eagles were 10-0, nationally ranked, and they had to go on the road like three times during those playoffs, like up into the mountains to play football. And it was just weird because of the way they slotted the playoffs back then. Now, of course, the CPC has five teams in the playoffs. And yeah, that'll be an interesting one too. Shout out to offensive coordinator Ronnie Horton, who was in his bag last Friday. That's probably the best offensive game I've seen him call since I started doing play-by-play for East Forsyth 5 years ago. Like they just had a nice mix of run and pass. Bryce just had complete control of the offense right now. So I'm very curious to see how far this East Forsyth team can go. I will be out in Kernersville at the Nest calling that game tonight for WTOB, 7 o'clock kickoff. Myself, Hot Rod Funderburk. You can hear that game on 980 AM in the Triad and 96.7 FM, 1570 AM out in Greensboro if you're a Page fan. And, of course, we're going to have the Grimsley game, too. Grimsley taking on North Mecklenburg. That game is a 7:30 p.m. kickoff. You can hear that on WCOG 105.3 FM and 1320 AM. Both games you can hear on NFHS Network on the streams for each school that's hosting East Forsyth and Grimsley. And, of course, you can hear it online at TobaccoRoadSportsRadio.com. We are out of here. Go enjoy high school football tonight. A lot of stuff going on. If you're in Greensboro, it is GO, the greatest homecoming on earth. So everyone out there, be careful. A&T taking on Townsend, 1 o'clock kickoff on Saturday. We'll have that here for you as well. And basketball's right around the corner. We got A&T basketball on Tobacco Road Monday night. So everyone pray for me, please. So much stuff going on. It's ridiculous. But we got to get out of here. Shout out to Mark Pruitt, Dimitri Robinos, who stopped by earlier, and the Athletics, Brendan Marks. You've been listening and watching franchise players here on TobaccoRoadSportsRadio.com.